The dust is settling around the release of the CFAP 2 details, and sign up for the payment program started yesterday. So what do we understand better today now that sign up has started, and where might the program come up short? We'll figure it out.
Live from the autumn of our year of discontent via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Ethan Lane from the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Then it's the farm CPA, Paul Niefer. And in the final segment, Greta Gustafson from the American Red Cross. And right after the news, Farm Journal seed and production editor, Sonia Begeman. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
Do you prefer autumn or fall?
It depends. If I want to be all fancy about it, you know, and sound like a handsome newsman and, you know, with all the throat clearing and the red leather and the yellow leather, you know, it's autumn for sure. For sure.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Fall, you know, I'm over 6 feet tall. So the word fall to me, you know, to shorter men like yourself, it's a more dire concept to me than to most. It's a long way down from up here, baby. So we'll just go with autumn.
Okay. Whatever. I should have known better than to open that up.
Shots fired already.
Yeah, exactly.
You say it's the dust is starting to settle on CFAP 2. There's dust in the air trailing out behind combines and tractors and grain carts over in my neck of the woods, bro.
This fall, now that harvest has started this fall. There is plenty of dust flying out there, and guys are getting very aggressive with it. We're starting to get some of the initial responses or the initial takes on what guys are thinking on harvest. And that August and early September had an impact on the bean crop. We knew that it was going to at least put a cap on yield potential, but in some cases it pulled that yield back quite a bit on soybeans just because of the smaller seed size.
That's the word around the campfire in my area too. Yep.
Yeah, it's going to be a learning experience as we make our way through this fall and into the final production estimates from USDA in January. So a lot to learn about the corn and soybean crops, no doubt about that. Okay, man, we got a lot of ground to cover. Let's go ahead and get started.
Yep. Well, let's hit highlights from USDA's crop progress and condition update. That's for the week ending September 20. Corn is 95% dented, 59% mature, 8% is harvested, 61% rated good to excellent. Soybeans, 59% dropping leaves, 6% harvested, 63% good to excellent. Cotton, 57% opening bolls, 11% harvested, 45% good to excellent. Spring wheat, 96% harvested. Winter wheat, 20% planted, 3% emerged. Chip?
Yeah, that the harvest progress is enough to suggest that we should probably be seeing some hedge pressure come in here. But on a day like today, and corn, soybeans, they're trading well off the highs right now from where they were earlier. But normally I would save this for this afternoon, but this is such an impressive list. Export sales, 140,000 metric tons of corn for China, 320,000 metric tons of corn for unknown, 266,000 metric tons of soybeans for delivery to China, 264,000 metric tons of soybeans to unknown. All of those for the 2020-21 marketing year. We've got that positive demand news in the market, but I think the idea that we are going to see some harvest hedge pressure is probably weighing on this corn and soybean market.
Well, and after a pressuracious day like yesterday, it certainly seems like we're at buying.
There was many plungitudes yesterday, wasn't there? Plungations?
Plungitudinal day. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The U.S. House will vote on its continuing resolution stopgap measure to keep the government open through the end of the fiscal year. The measure does not have the support of the White House or Senate Republicans and does not include replenishment funds for the Commodity Credit Corporation, or CCC. Democrats say they want to negotiate CCC funding in a separate bill, and the House Rules Committee on Monday refused to allow debates on the proposed floor amendments addressing the CCC. Speaker Nancy Pelosi, in a statement, said, quote, what the Trump administration wanted added to the clean continuing resolution was not help for farmers. It was more than a $20 billion taxpayer dollars that the Trump administration views as a bottomless, unaccountable political slush fund. Other Democrats have since parroted the slush fund narrative in reference to CCC funding. The CCC under attack, brother.
Yeah, we're going to talk to Ethan Lane about that here in just a little bit. We've got Congressman Conaway coming on tomorrow morning to talk about what is going on there. And it looks like just got word that the House may not vote on that CR today. They may push it back.
Oh,
yeah.
Sources say a Supreme Court nomination to replace the recently passed Justice Ginsburg is likely forthcoming soon, with President Trump reportedly considering candidates including Amy Coney Barrett for the post. The Senate would have to move unusually quickly to secure confirmation ahead of the November 3 elections, and Democrats have vowed resistance, with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi threatening she has, quote, arrows in her quiver to impede swift confirmation of Trump's pick. Senate Judiciary Committee Chair Lindsey Graham has said Republicans do have the votes to confirm the president's nominee before the election, saying the committee is prepared to move forward. Big deal on this one, Chip.
Oh, Graham was harassed at home last night. Mitt Romney was out this morning saying if there's a vote held, he will support the vote. He will vote based on the merits of the nominee. Okay? So that was one of the unknowns, whether or not he would support a vote or not.
Okay, excellent.
So, all right.
Just quickly, CFAP2 breeding stock exclusions raise the ire of the Iowa Cattlemen's Association. Maybe we can get some more from Ethan Lane from NCBA on that. I'm not sure.
We certainly will. We certainly will. All right. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Sonia Begeman, Farm Journal Seeds and Production Editor. How you doing, Sonia?
I'm doing great. First day of fall. Can't complain.
That's right. That's right. Okay, some of the producers that were forced to abandon a cornfield this year, a lot of work to do in those fields, isn't there?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I do have to say, first thing is, you know, if you're in one of those areas that's been affected with down corn, you got to work with your insurance agents first. Make sure that, you know, you get their green light that it is zeroed out before you take any of these tips on how to deal with it. So talk to insurance first. But we're dealing with a corn that has a lot of biomass. We were not quite the black layer when this derecho storm came through. So it's a lot of leaves, it's a lot of stalks, it's a lot of grain. So some of the best things you can do right now to start managing that is, you know, get in there with your mowers, get that corn, you know, broken off from the base so that it's no longer connected in any way, and then start chopping and get that residue into some bite-sized pieces, because right now it's their whole corn stalks. That's too much for a microbe to start eating. So get it into little bites for it and use this sunlight that we still have to start curing and start getting that stuff dried down and getting it not green anymore, to where hopefully we stop or start reducing the amounts of molds that we're seeing. So if you haven't gotten out there to do it, get out there, get it cut, get it in small pieces to really start working on it. Because you want it to be dry before you incorporate it into the soil. You don't want to work molds back into the soil.
Yep.
Talking with Kinsey earlier this week, you know, it's just a big risk if you're putting mold back in the dirt. So start working on it now, and just be really aware that we're going to have some volunteer corn next year. So
absolutely.
Corn on corn.
Absolutely. Excellent, Sonia. Thank you so much. That's Sonia Begeman, Seeds and Production Editor. We got Ethan Lane coming up next right here on AgriTalk.
Join AgriTalk next week for Dairy Week, paying tribute to America's dairy farmers and celebrating the dairy industry. Dairy Week is presented by Elanco Animal Health, with additional support from Aspen Veterinary Resources and Cargill Animal Nutrition. Register free at dairyherd.com/dairyweek.
Welcome back. Glad that you could join us today. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me, and we got Dairy Week coming up next week. That's going to be a blast, man.
Absolutely, we do, and the ladies are very excited about it.
Are they?
They've all crowded around there early, you know.
Right.
But they're camped out
outside
my broadcast bunker here because they want to be a part of it.
Can't wait. Absolutely, they want to be a part of it. It will be interesting to see what contributions they have during next week's show.
I don't think there's much to it. I don't think.
Okay. All right, let's bring in Ethan Lane. He is the VP of Government Affairs for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Ethan, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm doing well, Chip. How are you?
I am fine. Can we start with the CCC funding, Ethan? Because it looks like the House has pushed back the CR vote. Some speculation that there is a last-minute effort to strike a deal with the Republicans on this. But is that what you're hearing?
It is. Okay. You know, I think you have our friends on Capitol Hill that support agriculture, and I'm counting both sides of the aisle here.
Yep.
You know, that are looking at this and saying, gosh, we have seen what CCC can do and what value it can provide for producers in the kind of year we've all suffered through in agriculure and in the cattle business. How can you ignore that moving into the fall when we're getting these last-minute packages put together? I think there is some more wrangling happening. It's unfortunate that, you know, we still have some people that are invoking, you know, market facilitation payments and things like that from several years back, rather than, you know, the good work that we've seen right in front of us and even over the last few days with the yeah. CFAP 2.0 program. So we're hopeful that they're going to be able to get something done here. This isn't a partisan issue. This is making sure farmers and ranchers can keep feeding America as we work our way through this COVID mess.
Yeah. Yeah. The representation in Washington, D.C., out of the state of Iowa, we've got six, of course, our two senators and four representatives, and it's evenly split between Republicans and Democrats, and they all signed a letter urging that the CCC be funded. So if you're looking for an example of bipartisanship on this issue, look at the state of Iowa, Ethan. This is I was very, very happy to see that letter.
Oh, and I think that's true in some, you know, in different parts of the country where you have states that understand what agriculture means to their bottom line, and Iowa's certainly at the top of that list. You know, we talk to a lot of those bubble district members, I call them. That's that class of Democrats that came in 2018 in Trump heavy districts, you know, in that off year election. And we've been really trying to help them understand that even though they have new suburban developments taking over their districts, ag is still the backbone of their district. That is the business that drives their economy. And they cannot ignore what's happening on those farms right outside of town as they make friends with the new neighbors. Some understand that better than others. They all nod and say, oh, yeah, I get it. But this is when you really start to see if they're getting it or not, when they show up to support agriculture at this kind of crisis point, or whether they use it as a political football.
Right. Very good. Any idea, speculation, what this last minute strike a deal will look like between the Democrats and Republicans on this?
Well, I mean, it's changed about three times this morning, so I don't know how much I want to speculate. You know, they all want to get a deal done to fund the government. And then the question is, what else can be done as part of that package? Can we get an extension of livestock mandatory reporting so we don't have that authority lapse and lose that critical tool for the market at the end of the month? Can we get some replenishment of funds for CCC? Can we do some sort of just regular order business items that really need to get done so that we don't go into this election with a lot of unanswered questions? Because, you know, as many cycles as I've been through, one thing is for sure, you just don't know what you're going to get the day after the election. And lame duck is not the time to be trying to do important backfill business like this. Get it done before you go home and rerun for Congress. So I think that's what we're trying to see across the finish line here in the next few days. I'm encouraged that they were even going to have a vote this morning. If you had asked me that question yesterday, I would have said it's probably not likely. As much as it seems like, I mean, you know, and there is some last minute wrangling, that's progress. That means they feel like they're close to a deal. I think that's positive. And look, it's September 21st today. Or 22nd, you know, most of the time when we're doing these government funding deals, it's the night of the 29th or the 30th that we're having this fight. So, you know, they're early by congressional standards, and that bodes well for some kind of deal as well.
Good perspective, Ethan. Good perspective. You mentioned the mandatory price reporting there. I'll admit that one had kind of fallen off my radar. I was talking about it and thinking about it a couple of weeks ago, but it had slipped my mind that was at risk. Anything else in that CR that we need to be aware of on market issues?
You know, no. I think that okay. the idea right now is just to make sure that the authority doesn't lapse. Let's not get into a situation where it's voluntary to report that information. Let's keep it alive. I mean, there's a lot of obviously conversation on cattle market issues that certainly has dominated our agenda here in the NCBA offices. But the goal right in front of us is let's make sure we don't let that authority lapse. They're looking at different options to ensure that.
Okay, CFAP 2. What's your take? Is it adequate? Does it fall short? What's your take?
So we put out a damage estimate. We had seven economists back in the spring doing an estimate of cattle industry impacts. It was $13.6 billion. My understanding is USDA received something on the order of $40 or $50 billion worth of those types of estimates and requests. So we know that the funds that have been pushed through the CARES Act, $9.5 billion in direct appropriations to the secretary, plus that $6 billion that they already had in the CCC, made that first round of CFAP up. Now, this is the $14 billion that was appropriated back in the CARES Act to CCC specifically for these checks. That is progress in and of itself. We were hoping to see some movement on that $14 billion in July. I'll take September. At least we've got checks going out the door.
Okay.
I think they did make some changes that showed that they're learning from what didn't work in the first round. And look, I'm not being overly critical. The April 15th date was a miss, a big, big, big miss by USDA in this program. But they are tilting up what should have been a 3 or 4 year effort under a farm bill plus implementation in the matter of months. So they need to get credit for the fact that they have done yeoman's work on short notice here.
Right.
They've corrected some of those issues. These $55 inventory payments and a new payment limit is going to get some producers the money that they need. Our damage estimate said that a cow-calf producer in 2020 was going to have about $111 market impact from COVID. With the first round of CFAP inventory payments at $33 plus this $55 on your calf plus the $33 you got on the mother cow in the first round, you're at about $110 on your pair for the year. That gets us pretty darn close to where we felt like we needed to be for cow-calf producers. On the whole, I'm very pleased to see another round going out the door. I'm pleased that they've targeted it to producers that we think really need the assistance, but I don't want to ever leave one of those conversations without making note of the fact that we still left a big donut hole of producers back in April that did not get an actual loss payment in part one and took tremendous market losses on their sales back in April. And we're just not done there. And that's why it's important to get some more funding out of Congress and allow USDA to keep refining this and keep pushing some resources out the door.
Okay, about 90 seconds left here, Ethan. Nothing for the breeding stock.
Nothing for breeding stock. The term I wish they had used that they used in the lead up was marketable livestock. So think bred heifers are included in that. Bull calves are included in that.
Sure.
What they're not going to pay on is mother cows and culls and bulls. So, everything else that's correct. Everything else in that marketable livestock bucket, you can expect to have a payment on. And look, FSA is going to have some local office issues where they're not necessarily clear on that. And I would encourage producers, pick up the phone, call your state cattlemen's association, call me, call NCBA, and we will go to work on this. We've been triaging these issues one producer at a time for months now, and we're getting pretty darn good at it.
Right. But
if you don't think you're getting what you should be getting, throw a hand in the air and ask a question, because there is a lot of stuff formulating on this thing that needs some clarification. So let us get involved and we'll go to work and try to help.
All right. 30 seconds left on this one. Wildfire and hurricane relief programs. Where do they go for information on that, Ethan?
Start with your state. Start with your state cattlemen's association, because they're going to be, and that's where we're working as well, they're going to have the most relevant information for your disaster, whether it's fires in California, whether it's a hurricane on the Gulf Coast, whether you're getting hit with, mosquito damage or death loss from fire. Start with your state and then work that way. We're working hand in glove with our state affiliates and those individual states, and that'll make sure you get to the right place and get the right information on what's available for your particular situation.
Very good, Ethan. Thank you so much for your time this morning. Appreciate it. We need to get you back on. Got a couple other issues we need to talk about, okay?
You say the word, I'll come running.
Sounds good. Thank you, Ethan. That is Ethan Lane, the VP of Government Affairs for NCBA. We've got Paul Niefer from Clifton Larson Allen up next on AgriTalk.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer Senior Market Analyst Jeff Wilson. Jeff, after the strength that we saw last week, the setback that we saw yesterday, it feels like kind of a battleground day between the bulls and the bears in this grain market, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly what's going on. You know, we got more sales announcements this morning to China, which confirmed the talk that we heard yesterday. And the market is saying, well, you know, we've kind of been pricing that in for a little while now. Right. Maybe we're going to need to see some continued buying over the course of the next several weeks. And I think the thing that's really capping things is that the harvest weather looks pretty good for the next week or two, and things should be coming off the fields fairly quickly. The yield reports that we've been hearing are mixed. You know, some better than expected, some maybe a little disappointing, some about on average. So we're only 10% into the or less than 10% into the corn harvest and 6% on the beans, and it's a long way to go to make a trend there. So I think that, you know, the story is the funds have bought a lot of corn and beans and wheat, for that matter, and, you know, they're about maxed out. And, you know, the stock market retreat yesterday is just adding a little sense that maybe it's time to take a few profits.
Exactly. Big gains in lean hogs. It kind of smells like a pork sale in there to China.
Could be that, but it also could be the cold storage report comes out this afternoon. We've had very positive reports all summer long showing very good domestic demand for pork. And we also have a very big, very big hogs and pigs report on Thursday.
Yep. Yeah, good reminder there. Little bit of pressure on the live cattle and feeder cattle prices today, but for the most part, the focus is in the hog market. Thank you, Jeff. That is Pro Farmer Senior Market Analyst Jeff Wilson on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
America's Conservation Ag Movement would like to recognize the Pork Checkoff for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Davis Michelson is with me.
Yes, sir.
And with CFAP 2 details out, sign-up has started. Let's find out how things are progressing with this. We got Paul Niefer, Farm CPA from Clifton Larson Allen. He joins us right now. Paul, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm doing good. We actually got rid of the smoke, so it's I can see the sun now.
Okay. That's exactly where I was going to start, was looking for an update on that. How you been dealing with it up there, man?
You know, for about 10 days, it was pretty brutal. I mean, I think a week ago Saturday, our index was in the 460 range. And, you know, once you hit 500, it's extremely hazardous. So it was a couple days there. It was really pretty bad. But we had some rain on Saturday, and that seemed to have cleared everything up. And right now, it's looking pretty good.
Good. Yeah, that rain, boy, that was needed in a big, big way to clean, well, not only to help with the fires, but to clean up the air.
For seeding.
No question about it.
Well, and for winter wheat seeding, it definitely helped on that area too. So, because that right now in our area, that's what they're doing right now.
Right. You know what? We started that conversation like everybody knows where you're at. You're up in Washington, right, Paul?
Yep, Washington State, southeastern Washington, a little town of Dayton, about 40 miles west of Idaho and 10 miles north of Oregon.
Okay. All right. Very good. So sign up for CFAP 2 started yesterday. Do we know anything more today that we didn't know yesterday?
I don't know if we knew anything more. The one thing I was very happy about, I went in and used their calculator and did some rough calculations, and the number they came up was exactly the same number I had calculated when it got announced on Friday of last week. So it was sort of nice that I actually had it right. You know, and once in a while, that's important. You know, we know that corn growers likely are going to, well, they will get, when they sign up, they're going to get approximately 23 cents a bushel. It's 58 cents times 40%. And what they did, instead of just saying how much it was per bushel, they said, okay, here's the amount of crop that was marketed between April 1st and August 31st. And then they said, here's your payment rate. So you had to take that rate, you know, that 40% rate times 58 cents. And then you do it based on your 2020 APH, not as trend adjusted, but just your proven yield. And that's what you're going to be paid on.
Right. Okay. Anything else on the row crop side of things there that we need to be aware of, Paul? It seemed fairly what about the yield? What is the yield that is being used to determine what the payment is?
It is that 2020 APH, so your actual proven history, your regular APH. So, you know, you have the 10-year window, so you need to have at least four years of history up to 10 years. So whatever your APH for that crop is for your farm. Now, you may have to go in and multiply it by all the farms that you farm, but whatever that APH is, that's what you're going to use. Now, if you don't have an APH, they then go to your county. So if you're in, let's say, Buchanan County of Iowa, which is near you, and you don't have an APH, then you're going to get stuck with the 2019 ARC county yield, but at the 85% level. So you're going to be likely penalized compared to, you know, having an actual APH. So somebody with, you know, approximately a 200 bushel APH is going to get about a $46 payment for corn.
Okay.
And then soybeans is going to be about 31 cents per bushel. And wheat growers actually got compensated this time. You know, they sort of were left out of the first round. They're going to get almost 40 cents per bushel.
Yeah.
Plus, if they signed up for PLC, you know, next month they're going to get the equivalent of about another 70 cents. So wheat growers are looking at about $1.10 that they're going to get here in the next month or two.
Right. Okay. Now, I just want to clarify, when you say the 2020 APH, you are not, it does not include the 2020 yield. It's the APH you have for 2020.
Exactly. So it's already in their record books, and then it's based on your planted acres. Now, remember, on the second round here, if you had prevent plant, as of right now, you're not going to get any payment. But remember, was it MFP number one or MFP number two? Or there, I think it was MFP number two, because it was last year. You know, there was that squawk by the farmers that got stuck with the prevent plant that they actually then came out with, okay, if you have a proven or a cover crop that's appropriate cover crop by such and such date, we'll grant you $15 per acre. That might happen now because all the other crops, so your barley, your corn, the cotton, sorghum, soybeans, sunflowers, and wheat, those are the only ones where you do this calculation, you know, your APH times whatever that rate is. Everybody else is going to get $15 per acre if they qualify.
Right. Okay. Over to livestock. Let's say, okay, the payment rate on hogs is $23 per head. Now, what if Randy and John and I each own one third of the operation and each own one third of that hog? What's the payment rate on that hog?
It's still $23 per head. So you're not going to get paid more than the total inventory on hand, because if once you dug into the CFAP number two that was part of the filing with the Federal Register, you look in there. So what it is it's the lesser of, I'm going to say, approximately 10,500 head times the payment limits. So you got three there. You got Roger, John, and Paul, whoever it might be. So you got three. You got 33,000 or inventory on hand. So, yeah, there was some confusion based on the website. People were thinking, well, if I had 5,000 hogs, but there was five of us, we're going to get paid based on 15 or 25,000 hogs. No, you're only going to be paid based on the actual number of hogs.
Right. Well, you know, it's the way that it's written is where the confusion came from. The quantity is multiplied by the number of payment limits for the farm.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what that's what I first wrote in our blog post on Friday. But then, like I said, I downloaded the actual application or the actual CFAP form or from the actual regs. And I think it's on page 7. It goes into all the details of how they calculate. And cattle's like 4,546 head, or, you know, you get extra times your payment limits.
Yep.
And they actually did loosen up the payment limits, because before on CFAP number one, if you had three people that were, you know, working at least 400 hours, either service or management, you got an extra payment up to that $750,000 limit. Well, you're going to have some restrictions based on your ownership percentage. Well, now it looks like on this, as long as you have three people that are working, that are owners, it sounds like you automatically qualify for the full 750, even though one person might own 90% and the other two own 5%. At least that's what it looks like based on the regs.
Gotcha. 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 Okay. Anything on the dairy side that has caught your attention?
Pretty straightforward. $1.20 per hundred weight from April 1 all the way through the end of the year. Now, September 1 through the end of the year is based on an average of their production from April 1 through August 31st. But, you know, that's going to be pretty easy to calculate. They all have those records.
Yeah, absolutely. And then it's just times the remaining days of the year through December 31, and then multiplied by the $1.20 to get the payment rate, payment.
You take your average daily times 122, I think was the number they had, 122 days, and then add in your actual from April 1.
Right. Okay, tax man, what do we need to keep in mind as we're looking at these payments when it comes to tax season?
Once you collect it, it's going to be taxable. So if you want to push it into 2021, then you might file toward the end of the period. But we already know there's a political battle. We already know the House is, doesn't want to fund, CCC. So who knows if you're going to get your PLC payment next month? You know, we got that battle here over the next week or two. Now I think we'll be fine. But if I was a farmer's shoe, I'd take the money right now, because there's other ways that we can reduce their income.
Gotcha. You know, there's one other thing, and I highlighted this from the original press release on CFAP, Paul, and I just found it here. If your agricultural operation has been impacted by the pandemic since April 2020, we encourage you to apply for CFAP too, even if your commodity is not listed. You know, raise your hand.
Yeah. Well, look at CFAP number one. You know, there were multiple commodities that got added in later on. So I know out in my area, my cousins grow chickpeas or garbanzo beans, hummus, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And it's not listed as being qualifying, but I'm going to tell them go ahead and apply for it. Well, they're applying it because they're going to get a wheat payment. But there's no reason not to apply.
Yeah, exactly. So even if you don't see it on the list, if you feel like you were not, or if you feel like your operation was impacted, USDA has encouraged you to apply for CFAP 2. So get it done. Well, until these 11?
I think it sounds right. And, you know, and I think President Trump wants to apply, because that might help him get reelected.
I think he certainly does. Paul, thank you so much for all your work on this. You're my go-to guy on helping to understand this stuff. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Chip.
All right. That is Paul Niefer, Farm CPA from Clifton Larson Allen. We're going to get an update from Greta at Red Cross next.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
All right, hey, real quick, Davis, before we get to Greta, there was a couple of Twitter comments out here. At Hort4Sci says, FYI, for row crops, all you need to report is acres, and FSA does all the calculations.
Okay.
It looks like it. And then this one from at Doug Anderson Powell. He wants to know what the PLC payments are for corn and soybeans. Said to ask Paul quick, but we've got, let's see, corn is projected. I'm just getting this from Paul right now. Corn is projected at 10 cents. Beans are zero. I knew the beans would be zero. Sorghum, 65 cents. Wheat, 92 cents. Barley, 26 cents. Last week, John Newton, the chief economist at Farm Bureau, American Farm Bureau Federation, estimated payments, PLC payments on an acre basis of $28 for wheat, $79 for seed cotton, $10 per acre on corn, $162 on peanuts, $83 on medium and long rice, and $31 for sorghum. So there's the answer to that. Okay, let's go out west. Greta Gustafson is with the American Red Cross. She joins us right now. Greta, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you today?
Thanks for having me on to talk about what we're seeing out here in Oregon with the wildfires.
Right, right. We got an update last week from Barb Iverson, Oregon Farm Bureau. I'd love to hear what you're seeing right now, Greta. There were some weekend rains. Did it help?
That's right. So, you know, even though we are seeing fire conditions and the smoke and air quality conditions improving slightly, there's no longer that really thick smoke. There's still dozens of wildfires that are burning across this state, and there's still areas that are under evacuations. There's still people who are forced out of their homes, and we're starting to hear reports too of just areas that are completely burned out and areas too that people can't even get back into yet. So this is definitely still an ongoing disaster and something that these folks here are still going to need some support for a long time.
Greta, you know, you hear some comments like you just made and you think, oh, those poor people. And you think, oh, it's got to be scattered populations here and there. But we're talking about tens of thousands of people being displaced.
That's right. So last night we saw nearly 3,000 people across the state of Oregon in emergency lodging. And this is, you know, thousands of people staying in hotels. Wow. We had some people staying in some congregate shelters as well. I was actually just at one of these shelters yesterday in Southern Oregon. And I mean, it's just interesting to hear from folks. Some people are just so grateful to have a place to stay, but at the same time, they've been evacuated from their homes for weeks now, and right, they're anxious to really figure out what that next step is and understand, you know, what, if anything, they're going to be able to go back to.
Yeah. Have you been able to get into some of these communities, Greta, and provide that help in you know, right at the doorstep?
So what we've been doing is we have a couple different ways. Is we're handing out supplies and meals at hotels that people are staying in. We've also set up some distribution sites where people can come and pick up shovels and rakes and sifters and get those cleanup supplies that they need. And we're also, I mean, right now we're continuing to provide shelter, and people are still coming to us just for that hot meal and that place to stay and getting a clean shower. It's definitely still just a lot of different needs that we're seeing across the state.
Okay. All right. What does Red Cross need from the rest of the country to help out?
Yeah, so there's a few different ways that people can help, and the best thing to do is go to redcross.org. There you're going to find ways that you can make a financial donation, which, I mean, is vital for us to be able to do this work here. But also, people can volunteer to help, too. People can put on that red vest, help their neighbors, get out in the community. There's also ways to volunteer virtually from your home, too. But then one last way is actually rolling up a sleeve and donating blood. Disasters like this can actually cancel blood drives. So going out in the non-affected areas and donating blood is a big help to make sure that communities across the country are prepared too.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, you're out on the West Coast dealing with the wildfires right now, Greta. But boy, down on the Gulf Coast, dealing with some flood and some hurricane and tropical storm damage down there, the Red Cross is on the scene down there as well.
That's right. I mean, that's the beauty of the Red Cross, is that we're this large national organization and we can respond to multiple disasters at once. In fact, we actually respond to over 60,000 disasters a year. And so being able to use these large volunteer networks that we have and get them out in the community to help their neighbors is really what we're doing after all these disasters that we've been seeing from coast to coast, really.
Yep, there to help, there to help. Greta, thanks for what you're doing out there. Again, remind people where to go to lend a hand.
That's right. Visit redcross.org. You're going to find a lot of ways to donate, volunteer, and just get involved and help your community. So thanks so much for having me on.
You bet. Be safe out there, Greta. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. That is Greta Gustafson from the Red Cross. They do a lot of good work, Davis. A lot of good work. Yes.
They do. And there's work to be done out there and all across the West Coast.
That's right. That's right. When you look at how the flooding and the storm surges has impacted lives down on the Gulf Coast, obviously they need some help down there as well. So it's a time of great need. What'd you call it? Our year of discontent at the open of the show?
The autumn of our discontent, yes.
The autumn of our discontent.
We're one season closer to 2021.
Here we are. Yeah, let's just hope that it gets better. All right, man. Thank you so much for listening this morning. You got to come back this afternoon. Phil Strebel from Blue Line Futures is going to be joining us. And tomorrow morning, get this, Congressman Mike Conaway from Texas and a Farmer Forum with Kevin from Minnesota and Gene from Missouri.